Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for the second hour. It is June 14th, 2020, Flag Day, and my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name's Bill Cundiff. And,
do tell, Bill.
Yeah, we have a sponsor. Yeah. We have a sponsor.
Go forward
this,
with
this
that.
Hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape Machinery carries all the small ag line and turf line there at 3119 Twinview Avenue. Go by and see them. They have pretty good stock on hand right now. They also have the Honda generator line, which you can you'll probably be needing here shortly. And also their new product line is steel. They have a great inventory of steel products. Go by and take a look at what they have. You can reach them on the phone at 226-9226 or online at papemachinery.com. There you go.
It always kind of makes me laugh when you say that, because in light of all the looting, you know, steel seems like a dangerous name for a product. It's almost like an invitation.
Yeah. Steel products.
Steel products, not the real steel, not the EAL part.
Yeah.
So our guests today are Dr. Lyle Rapacki. I'll give you the shrimpy version on his resume, but I would really encourage you to go to the website and look up not only their resumes, because these guys are absolute subject matter experts. So this isn't a show about somebody's opinion or, you know, what they read in some, you know, on some website, or God forbid what they heard on CNN.
Also, too, I'd like to add that yes. Lyle is an expert on John Deere tractors now, too. I actually got a picture of him driving a John Deere.
According to last week. Yep.
Yeah, last week we caught him.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yes, we have him on video with a song playing in the background that says she thinks my tractor's sexy. So, not to put too fine a point on
it. full disclosure for all of our listeners, the reason for me having to do this is because the big show here by Aaron and Bill only pay me $1.85, and some,
you got $1.85.
I was going to say thanks a lot for blowing our cover.
Yeah, there you go.
$1.40.
All right, checks in the mail, Claire.
Never mind. Let's move on. We're not to discuss this anymore.
Okay. Well, so that being said, Lyle is the owner of Sentinel Intelligence Services, or so he says, which carries out intelligence functions, according to the name.
When I'm not working on my tractor.
And he provides consultations to elected officials in and out of Arizona, and he has a lot of clients in industry. I'm not sure if it's the tractor industry, but we could draw that parallel. Those guys were considered essential services, so actually you should loop them in. And plus, they're all usually pretty conservative. You know, you don't. Mm-hmm. It was always fun going to tractor conventions because you just didn't spend a lot of time having to argue about politics. You mostly just, you know.
Yeah, it was pretty cut and dry.
You could say whatever you wanted.
Do you want to grow food or do you want to buy it overseas?
Yeah. And Claire, the one part I didn't read a lot out of her resume, but she was the former vice president of the Intelligence Summit. That's kind of fun. I just like that on my resume, the Intelligence Summit. She was a career counterintelligence and security studies at the Center for Counterintelligence and Security Studies, executive director of the Iran Policy Committee from 2005 to 2006, served as a consultant, intelligence analyst, and researcher for a whole bunch of defense firms. So Claire is much sought after. The fact that we have hogged up her afternoon is kind of awesome, actually. It's an awesome responsibility on our part.
No, I'm glad to be with you. Very happy to be here.
We're really happy to get...
Actually,
what?
Having Claire on, I called her the other day and I said, you've got to come do the show with me, the big show, which we've done before together, if you remember, a couple of years back. But I said, you know, you always make me look good because she's so smart and she knows so much stuff. And I can sit here and just sit back and listen and learn.
Well, in all seriousness, out in the cheap seats, they have a lot of experts on different things, radio, television, you know, cable, different stuff. The problem is they're only on those programs for about a minute and a half. If you really swing it, it's like 3 minutes. So you don't really learn anything. I think that's part of why it makes it so important for you guys to be on here, so people can actually hear from people who know what they're talking about.
I really appreciate this format and your invitation to be with you today. It's a good format. It's a very good program.
Yeah, we don't have to be all rushed.
I'm going to have Claire talk about. I'm sorry, Aaron.
No,
I'm going to have Claire talk about these groups. But one of the things that caught my attention when she was sharing before, and Claire will remember this, a couple of years ago, I think now, see, I coordinated a secure briefing for elected officials and law enforcement officials from six states. You'll remember this, Claire?
Absolutely, yeah. Arizona.
Yeah. In Arizona, I had elected officials and law enforcement from six states. Actually, the way it came about was five states plus Texas. Don't ask. That's how it was. Five states plus Texas. And we were very fortunate. Claire was a tremendous briefer to this group. So was John Guandolo, who is an expert subject matter specialist, former FBI agent. And Claire and John both did just a phenomenal job sharing with elected officials and law enforcement officials from all these western states a lot of what we're talking about today, but trying to get them prepared for what is taking place today. And one of the things that Claire's going to talk about now are the groups that are really the foundational groups for this. But I wanted to interrupt her and see if this will help and jiggle some of her memory. These groups are not that foreign to America. One of the founders, if I remember correctly, Claire, correct me, I think one of the founders of Black Lives Movement is Tometi, or Opal Tometi, and he was born in she was born in Arizona, grew up in Phoenix, and went to the U of A, University of Arizona in Tucson. Her parents were illegals from Nigeria. So we've had these open borders for the last goodness knows how many years. We've had a number of people from countries that are literally opposed to the United States slip across, not even slip, they just walk across our border and come in, and they work their way into our fabric of our society, and then they birth children who have grown up being Americanized, if I may say that, but at the same time, they've got a belief system that is absolutely anti-American. And what we're seeing today also among these groups are people who are now leaders who oppose, not just oppose America, but detest, hate America, mm-hmm. and they're bringing their belief systems with them into this riot and into the establishment of a different form of government like we're seeing in Seattle and some of these other places. So maybe with that, Claire, you could hit the ball out of the ballpark now.
Sure. So let me get to these three groups. Remember we said yep. red-green axis. Mm-hmm. Red, communist, Marxist, green, Islamic movement, Muslim Brotherhood, and then added to that, of course, the Black Lives Matter movement. So one by one, let's start with the Islamic movement that's led by the Brotherhood in this country. The Muslim Brotherhood formed an umbrella group, the imagery of its website and its publications is all patriotic, red, white, and blue. But an umbrella group with the intention of entering and contesting elections to become, in effect, the very first Muslim Brotherhood political party in America. They did this back in 2014, but the Brotherhood, of course, has been here since shortly after World War II. We can talk about that another time. But let me draw the connection, the very direct connection, if I may, between the Brotherhood, which is jihadist. It exists. It exists to overthrow the constitutional order and replace our constitutional law with Islamic law or Sharia, which is anything but constitutional. No such thing as individual liberty, government by consent of the governed, equality of all and human dignity before the rule of man-made law. These are our principles. These are our first things principles. This is what the Muslim Brotherhood and the overall global Islamic movement want to destroy and replace with Islamic law, which contains none of those. But the direct bridge, then, if you will, the connection.
Hold that thought, Claire. I don't want to stop you in the middle of it, but we do have to. Sorry, take a little break here. The one thing I wanted you to hit maybe before we leave that. That's kind of gone into the background. You don't hear about CARE. You don't hear about the Muslim Brotherhood. You don't hear about the connections.
Yeah, it has, and deliberately so, because they are deliberately playing a backup role right now.
Okay.
A quieter, behind-the-scenes role, very much there. And I will show you in the next set of things I'm going to bring you.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Very much there. But the shock troops, the street troops, are the other two.
That makes sense.
The communist Marxists and the Black Lives Matter movement.
Nice. Well, I hope this is helping people kind of decode this, so at least you know what you're looking at, and you realize this isn't some organic protesting thing that's going on out there. We will be right back with our guests, Claire Lopez and Dr. Lyle Rapacki. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Who is it?
Here we go.
Give a man a free house and he'll bust out the windows, put his family on food stamps now. He's a big spender, no food on the table, and the bills ain't paid, cause he's spending on cigarettes and PGA. They'll turn us all into beggars, cause they're easier to please. They're feeding our people that government cheese.
I do believe that is the plan.
That is the plan.
It's the plan. All right, Claire. So make it make sense.
So I was beginning with the Muslim Brotherhood because that is the first part I'll talk about here. And we talked about how the Muslim Brotherhood is Islamic with the obligation. I mean, it is obligatory in every Muslim on the face of the earth to wage jihad in one way or another, whether it be by financially supporting jihad or actually fighting jihad. And the Muslim Brotherhood is the vanguard of the Islamic movement in America. Now, where's the connection? So go back to late December 2015, when Nihad Awad, who's the executive director of Hamas in America, that would be doing business as CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, Nihad Awad was speaking to a conference, a Muslim Brotherhood conference. And think about late 2015. This is in the lead up, to the coming 2016 presidential election year. And here's what he said to the conference. Quote, in 2016, minorities will play a major role, African Americans and Latinos. We have to help those people in their causes because their causes are our causes. Black Lives Matters is our matter. Black Lives Matter is our campaign. Close quote. That is Nihad Awad of Hamas, CARE, in America, making the explicit endorsement for Black Lives Matter. Now, never mind that slavery, in particular Arab enslavement of African blacks, goes on to this very day and has never been outlawed under Islamic law. Never mind. He there is making that direct endorsement for Black Lives Matter. Now, fast forward to this year, 2020, another election year, presidential election year, and at the website of CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, is an endorsement of the Black Lives Matter movement once again on the national, the CARE national page. And so we can see the very close relationship there, whether it is ad hoc, opportunistic, yeah, it surely is. But what they're doing is trying to co-opt that movement as a vehicle for their own advancement. In other words, the Islamic movement in America co-opting or piggybacking, even if you will, on the Black Lives Matter movement, and indeed the entire civil rights movement, co-opting it, appropriating it as their own, as a vehicle to get themselves ahead. But very much in the background, as I said, this is website stuff. This is probably social media stuff for the Black Muslim Brotherhood. So segue over to the Black Lives Matter movement. What is the Black Lives Matter movement? Well, it was formed in about 2013, 2014. as a front group, an organized front group project of the Marxist-Leninist Freedom Road Socialist Organization. That organization, you can find them online, their website. They are openly Marxist, socialist, anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, pro-BDS movement, boycott, divest, and sanction movement, totally aligned with Palestinian terrorists in both Gaza and Judea and Samaria. Freedom Road Socialist Organization, also pro-Maoist, openly pro-Mao, as in the murderer of hundreds of millions of Chinese. Now, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, in the last year or a bit more, split. There was a schism within it, and the smaller part kept the name Freedom Road Socialist Organization, but the larger split off took the name Liberation Road. Liberation Road. And if you go to its website, it kept the same imagery as Freedom Road Socialist Organization, its parent, which is a great big red star on the horizon of a green field with a black pathway leading to it. But if you notice and you go to that website, you'll also see underneath that logo now in Spanish, El Camino de la Liberación. El Camino de la Liberación is Liberation Road in Spanish. And it speaks to their intent to reach a broader audience, Hispanic, Latino audience this election year. But from Liberation Road came Black Lives Matter movement. And they really took off after the Ferguson, Missouri riots and violence in the streets there. Now, the co-founders, I heard Lyle mentioning one of them. Let me mention the three of them to you. They are three African-American women, communists, with backgrounds in various and different communist organizations, but all to include the Freedom Road Socialist Organization. The first of these is Alicia Garza, definitely a communist background. The one that Lyle just mentioned is Opal Tometi, also a Freedom Road Socialist Organization background for her as well, absolutely Marxist, communist. And the third is an African-American woman who goes by the name of Patrice Cullors. And she describes herself as queer polyamorous practitioner of life, trained to believe in the international fight against U.S. imperialism. Okay, whatever.
So she's not wearing a flag shirt like I am.
She has an additional point on her resume, and that is that she was personally trained by former Weather Underground figure Eric Mann. So there's the crossover.
It's quite a resume.
The Muslim Brotherhood to the Black Lives Matter movement.
And they don't disavow each other. I mean, here are all the...
No. It's very open, although it may not be as publicly realized as... you know, might be seen on their websites, for example.
Jeez.
Now, it was the Black Lives Matter movement that spawned the defund the police narrative meme end of May this year, I think the weekend of the 30th, 31st of May. That defund the police came from them. Now, the thing, I've mentioned this a couple times now, there is a definite communist Chinese connection. Communist Chinese Party of Beijing connection. In the past, I would say that Moscow was probably more influential in the American Communist Party, U.S. Communist Party. Today, I would say that lead role has gone to the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much evident in the background of Freedom Road Socialist Organization, Liberation Road, and by extension, Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter movement. Let me read you one more thing from Black Lives Matter, because I think this is horrific, and it comes from their website, and it's a quote here, quote, "We are committed to disrupting the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another and especially for our children." Right? That, I think, forms a perfect segue into the next group. Let me just mention very quickly before I go to the communist, Marxist, Antifa umbrella groups, some of those groups that are part of the Black Lives Matter movement, very hostile, vicious, anti-police, anti-law enforcement. You'll recognize the name of the Huey P. Newton Gun Club, itself an umbrella group, coalition group, Blacks Against Racist Cops, African American Defense League, Black Power, imagery horrific from their websites, guns, weapons, ammunition, sniper rifles at Black Knights, that's another one, new Black Panther Party, continuation of the 1960s Black Panther Party, that imagery, very vicious and very explicit about targeting, ambushing, and killing police. That is what they're about. All right, do we have to take another break yet?
I know, you start anticipating it.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
No, we have like a couple of minutes, actually.
Okay, let me go quickly then. I'll launch into the last group.
Okay.
Of the red-green app.
Claire, before, hold on, I'm gonna because I'm older than you, Claire, so let me jump in.
But you're a white man, so that's like two demerits.
Yeah, but we've known each other, what, 12 years now, Claire, something like that? Yeah, I'm like an older brother, but she still beats me up. So, she just said something, Claire said something that was very important. They are ambushing police. Not only are they actually ambushing them, and we have reports to that effect, but they're now, throughout their movement, throughout their supporters who may be working at various luncheonettes, places like that, they're putting glass shards, they're putting liquids in food that law enforcement comes in and they're ordering. And we know this. It's not being reported, but it's a law enforcement intel matter.
Oh my
they
gosh.
Also are following cops home, and they're finding out where they live. And they're beginning to harass them in their homes. They're beginning to do things to either take home cruisers, take home police units, or their own personal units. They're also harassing the wives of law enforcement officers. This is extremely dangerous, and it is very well orchestrated. And this is not just about the protest of a gentleman who died terribly at the hands of a police. This is what Claire is pointing out here, is a very systematic, very sophisticated, well-planned-out training program to disrupt our legal system, our constitutional system, our principles, our communities, and to reestablish them through their own methods. So, thanks, Claire.
There was a report just in the last few days of a couple of police officers that got glass in their pizza, and I think that might have been in Atlanta. I'm not real sure.
Well, once you see once you see how all these groups are connected, and you realize they're all working together, they've all got these strategies.
Excellent.
And they've used them all over the world.
Excellent.
So
that's,
I hope people are
there. You go. That's
really
great.
Paying
well,
attention
you're
to
starting
that.
To put. And that's what Claire's talking about, what we're all trying to talk about. You're putting together the picture puzzle here.
Exactly. All right, we'll be right back. Take a quick break here. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm getting bugged driving up and down the same old strip. I gotta find a new place where the kids are hip. You're getting real well known. Yeah, the bad guys know us and they leave us alone. I get around, round, 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 round. I get around.
Hopefully that'll be our theme song when we're done with all this. But I don't know. You know, not to leave that topic of these guys targeting and basically trying to intimidate the police not to be the police. There was some critique. I don't know what town it was. Probably Minneapolis, where they were criticizing the police for not living in the communities where they are the policemen. I think really. Right now, the people who don't live in the places where they police are probably the lucky ones. I ruined the show.
Well, they're also less likely to be co-opted.
There's that. But can you imagine, you know, you leave the precinct and you go, you know, a half a mile down the road and there's your house. you know, with your wife and your kids, and they're, you know, that'd be just a huge, huge safety consideration. You guys have any idea how many?
The other thing that they're doing, of course, is publishing. They're doxing these officers and putting their home address information online. Public.
Correct.
What are you guys hearing? I know we've had some, you know, people retire early, some people resign, that kind of thing, that haven't done anything wrong, just kind of hit the wall and decided to be done with it. What's your sense of what's going on kind of inside there?
It is perfectly according to plan. Hundreds across the country are either retiring or thinking about it. This is the desired effect of the delegitimization and then the demoralization of our law enforcement forces, to depopulate them, to defund them, to denigrate them, demean them, and eventually they want to get rid of them.
So here are all these citizens.
Degrade the public trust in their ability to keep the public safe, and then what's going to happen?
Yeah.
The public,
victims
under threat, will arm themselves. Then what do you get? Then you're looking at vigilantism, and you're looking at not an insurrection, which is what we have right now, but then comes the Civil War period, because we don't have two sides fighting right now. It's not a civil war. There aren't two sides fighting. But they want to get to that point so that they can completely collapse society into chaos. That's the desired end point.
So the people who
that
are...
That follows...
I was just going to say, you know, I'd like you guys to also address at some point the people who are kind of playing the role of, it's, you know, it's not necessarily a mean term, it's a pretty common term in this, but the useful idiots. You know, the people who are kneeling and doing all this stuff and giving them money, thinking that they're going to, you know, buy their safety. They're our friend. They won't burn our building down now. We paid them.
This is the street violence is the enforcement mechanism of political warfare. The political warfare is the part about the narratives, the memes, the demoralization, the delegitimization, the inculcation of fear and panic. Mm-hmm. The desired outcome is the collapse. First, the collapse of law enforcement. We talked about that, but the collapse of the population. And their capitulation to the forces of violence. This is how this works. This is how this goes. And their capitulation then first takes place in their heads with fear and panic, and then it expresses itself outwardly in behavior, planting themselves face down in the dirt, apologizing for being born white, and the next thing that comes out are the great big buckets of Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Claire, didn't we see this move? I remember when we briefed those elected officials, excuse me, and the law enforcement people a couple of years ago in that closed session. We talked about how this was coming, but also how they were going to target conservative elected officials who would stand up for constitutional rights. They were going to actually target them and begin to remove them or isolate them so they could do what you just said. They could
The first target really has been the liberal democratic governed places, right. like the city councils of cities,
right.
Once they get them in line, then they think that the ability of the rest to hold the line will be diminished. That's what they're looking for. They don't have that yet. I mean,
okay.
We look at, North Carolina last night.
Right.
That mayor told those police to take down those barricades like hoot sweet.
But they bring in the liberal mayors, let's just say, and liberal councils, very liberal, Marxists. And what happens is they infiltrate through the city system of government, and then they bring in chiefs of police that also fit that alignment.
Right,
and so
those
what we
are
have
the liberal democratic enclaves and strongholds. It hasn't spread to red America yet.
No.
By creating these, surrounding them on the coasts and with these islands of autonomous zones, they intend to surround them and force their capitulation.
And so, of course, being a sanctuary city, that just red flags you. I mean, no accident on the color, tells them that hey, you're ripe for the picking.
Yeah. Well, let me get to Antifa, because I think this is what may be on most people's minds first off when they look at this and they think Antifa. So Antifa is short for anti-fascist or anti-fascist action. And the word comes from the German original, antifascistische Aktion, right? And that had its root in the 1930s. Soviet Revolution, 1917, communist rising through the 20s. But by the 30s, fascism is rising, National Socialism is rising, Nazism is rising. And they clashed on the streets. And that's where you get black shirts, the black bloc. Black shirts are communists. They fought in the streets of Germany, Italy, Spain against the brown shirts of fascism and Nazism in the 30s. In the 30s as well, the Soviet Comintern, the Soviet Communist International, that was the organization for the spread of Soviet communism worldwide, sent a delegation of Antifa to the United States. That's where when Antifa got its foothold in the U.S., the 1930s. They are direct ideological descendants of those communist street fighters. Now, the little, you know, pasty face, you know, thuggies, little thuggies coming out of their mommy's basement now on the streets, they don't know this. They don't know much of anything. But the leadership does. The imagery, the flags, the colors, red, black, white, all comes from the original Antifa of the 1930s. Its imagery is anti-fascist for a reason, because they were fighting Nazis. Antifa is not fascist. It is communist, and there is a difference. I recommend to your listeners videos that just came out over the last week, produced by James O'Keefe's organization called Veritas.
Yep.
They put a guy undercover in the Oregon, Portland, Oregon, Antifa organization, and he took undercover video for a period of time. He's no longer there now, of course, but the videos have just come out. And they show the tight group organization of local cell structures. Now think of these Antifa cell structures all over the United States. That's what the videos show. James O'Keefe, Veritas, and go look those up. I will show you one more connection. In one of the videos, as the undercover guy is walking to a meeting room inside of a library, his button cam, I guess it must be a button cam, is on, and he's taking images, photos of the hallway as they're walking to the meeting room in this library, and on the walls of the hallway are posters and notices and things. And for just a couple, two, three frames, very quickly, every one of us caught this immediately. There's a poster, and the poster is from a January 2011 CARE, San Francisco chapter poster, on their website. The poster is in orange, black, and white, and it says, "Build a wall of resistance, don't talk to the FBI." Direct connection right there on their wall, Antifa and Hamas. Antifa CARE, which is Hamas. Okay, some of the groups in the Antifa overall umbrella, who were, by the way, many of them present in Ferguson, Missouri, in Charlottesville, Virginia, by any means necessary, the Answer Coalition, Workers' World Party, totally Marxist-Leninist, Maoist, Refuse Fascism, which was itself founded by the Revolutionary Communist Party. It's going down. Many of these are violent. Some are not. Red Guards in Austin, Texas, very violent, very Marxist-Leninist, Maoist. Go look at their website if you want to get an eyeful of what they're all about. Imagery from, they're all similar imagery, right? The red, the black, and the white. That's why the costumes are all black. The flags are red and black and white. That is why you see the uniformity of that. They are all under the same umbrella. Revolutionary Communist Party of the United States. The Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement. This is a good one. They call for the abolition of all prisons. Not just all police departments, but all prisons in America. And they want to build an underground railroad to help people escape from prison.
Oh,
how's that?
What could go wrong?
It should go over really well. Okay, the last thing I want to tell you is about how they all get funded, because this is so important, and we mentioned it up at the top. But here's some more details. Everybody defaults right away to George Soros and his Open Society Foundation, and rightfully so. They have donated millions to Black Lives Matter. But there's so many others, and Lyle was mentioning some of these. Ben and Jerry's ice cream, for crying out loud. I mean, I do like Breyers better anyway, but Ben and Jerry's, Heinz ketchup, Taco Bell, Plowshares Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, Tides Foundation. You get the idea, the very largest of the so-called philanthropic foundations in America are donating either directly or indirectly to Black Lives Matter movement. A few more. Airbnb, DoorDash that delivers food delivery company, Pokemon, and I could go on and on. The list is quite long. Also, there is a donor alliance. Democracy Alliance is a liberal donor club closely affiliated with the Democratic Party. One last thing I'll mention here is that if you go to the Black Lives Matter movement website, you'll see a donor button. And if you push on the donor button, it'll take you where? To a website for Act Blue. What is Act Blue? Well, it's the Democratic Party funding channel. So you donate to Black Lives Matter movement, your money goes to Act Blue. Act Blue goes to Joe Biden down in the basement somewhere.
Good Lord. And, So you know, for the people
maybe we
who
could just stop
the,
it there. I don't know if you'll be able to have listener questions, Q&A, but if possible, well, I'm going to leave time for them.
Let's take a real quick break so you guys have time up to the top of the hour. And I just want to tell people, since you know this is all painting such a big picture and there's so much history involved, we have Dr. Peter Vincent Pry on next week, a friend of Claire's. They worked on the EMP Commission together. And he is going to go through the history of revolutionary movements like this and what that looks like as the backdrop to what we're seeing now. So we're not actually leaving this topic, although we'll have like 10 minutes left at the top of the hour. But there's a lot more to come on this because there's a lot to know. So please send this to your friends and help them smarten up and not actually feed the beast by donating to these things they think are well-meaning, because they're not. So you can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. Yeah, that's a song for the good guys, because we aren't going to take it. But people won't be able to push back on this if they don't know what it is. They'll be caught flat-footed, really, when they roll into town. So in the last, like, 10 minutes, what do you guys think people need to know?
I'm going to let Claire finish up with what you just asked. What do people need to know? Let me fill in one little piece here. So I can earn my $1.85 this week. During the protests, not the riots, not the insurrection, but during the protests, over 300 cities across the country had some form of a protest. And early on, very early on, many, many Americans, the numbers are 60-70%, supported reviewing law enforcement and making sure they did not practice this type of bad policing. But very quickly, it went from protests and sending a message to what we've been discussing today. Now what we have in Seattle is a microcosm of what could happen across this country when they take over city streets, like in Seattle, a seven-city block street. And then you have a ripple effect. Truck drivers who deliver food are now saying, we're not going into these cities. We refuse to haul goods, services of one form or another, or foods into these cities. And that's going to have an impact on people in and around those very immediate cities that have now been taken over. So that's another reason why the president has stood up and said, enough, enough. This is no longer a protest. This is an insurrection. And likewise, to keep it from turning violent again, we're going to break this down and stop it. Not to mention, like Claire, we've been talking about, this is an insurrection to replace government as we've known it. So there is a ripple effect to all that's been discussed today. And in these closing minutes, maybe Claire can go ahead and hammer it home as to what do you think we should be doing now.
Well, I don't know if this is possible for you guys, but I'll bet you your listeners have a bunch of questions. If you could open the phone lines or chat lines, we'd be glad to take questions.
Yeah, it just will jam us up. So we'd rather listen to you till the end, and then we'll funnel email questions after the fact. How's that? Because a lot of people listen to this on tape around the world, so once the commercial-free links go, Wednesday is the big day that they listen all over the place. So you have an audience that's much wider than Northern California and much wider than the United States, actually.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I will give an example from this past week. In a particular school district where I am working with a good friend of mine and a parent, and some of her friends with children in that particular school system, the parents are standing up and fighting back. They can see, finally, in the textbooks, in the curricula, what is being shoved down the throats of their children. And they finally are standing up, and that's what it's going to take. It's going to have to take... I mean, a lot of parents during the coronavirus mandatory lockdown got into homeschooling. Now, I mean, I think a whole lot of parents would probably be very good at things like maybe civics and geography and American history. But, you know, if it were me and we had to get much past third grade division in math, the poor kids, we'd all be lost. But that being said, the influence of the parents and the relatives, the older family, must, you know, remain and take an active role with the kids and their learning, you know, not just in the homeschooling part of it that we're in now because of coronavirus, but on a continuous basis to discuss around the dinner table or whenever you're sitting around together these issues flashing across the TV screens and explain to the younger members of the family who we are as Americans, what we stand for, why this is unacceptable. Why do we call this an insurrection or a revolution? What are the legal remedies available to the president to deal with that? The federalization of the National Guard, for example, or the invoking of the 1807 Insurrection Act. Most Americans have probably never heard of these things, never mind the kids. So I'm putting a lot on the families and the parents to have an active role in the young people in their lives, families or relatives, connected friends, you know, to convey to them the importance of our American heritage, which in its turn comes from Western civilization, that we of Western civilization were the lucky inheritors of Athens, of Rome, of Jerusalem. They don't even know what these things were. We've got to tell them because they're not getting it in the schools. What is American exceptionalism? What does that mean to be a shining city on a hill? They don't know these things because they're not getting them in school. And so this is what I would urge the listeners to take up in discussion. Not lectures, but a back and a forth. You know, with their kids and with other family members.
Well, that's where you learn. Home is typically where most of us learned. Remember how when we were kids we got a citizenship grade? That's where we learned how to be good citizens, and that's where we learned patriotism and right and wrong and, you know, morals and things. We learned that at home. And I think a lot of the time now we get busy, not everybody, but people get busy and they think that's kind of just, you know, they'll figure it out. No, they're not going to figure it out. They're going to wind up in Chaz or some form of Chaz. I guess they've changed their name.
I just think a lot of, you know, a lot of our younger folks are having trouble, you know, reaching and achieving what they think they deserve.
They'll get it that way.
Get their free stuff, and somehow they can achieve what the generations before them have achieved without working for it. I hate to say it that way, but I mean, life's not a free ride, and they've got it.
This is the thing. They don't understand from what they've been taught in school that socialism is not just about free stuff, that somebody has to pay for that, for food, for education, for classes, for schools, and for everything else that is part of our lives. They think it just, I don't know, grows on trees, or you just take it. You just take it from the rich because they don't deserve it. They didn't work for that. President Obama said that, didn't he? You didn't earn that. You didn't make that.
You didn't build it either.
Well, yeah, they did. And the kids have to learn where that comes from. And then they also have to learn about what happens every single time in history and every single time in geography across the world, whether Soviet Russia, communist China, or today's Venezuela, places where socialism, communism have been tried, have gotten a foothold, they become absolute hellholes to live in, with eventually it has to go to force because human beings don't want to live like this, and it goes to the guns. What did Mao say? Power comes from the barrel of a gun, and it winds up with piles of bodies and hundreds of millions of dead people. The kids have to learn this.
And then they absolutely don't, I mean, and not even just the kids, but I think people just do not believe that would happen here. That's something that happens elsewhere or happened in the past.
Well, it's not just the kids.
Happening. I mean, honestly, maybe let Chazistan go until they do run out. I mean, cut off the water, cut off the electricity, of course, but then let it go. No deliveries of anything. I'm sorry for the inhabitants. Maybe they could be allowed a way out who don't want to stay there. And the rest of them, they can just see what it's like. How do you get food? How do you get water? How do you get anything that needs electricity?
Sure.
How do you get medical care? What do you do when your dumpster catches on fire? Oh, they called 9/11, didn't they?
Hence the term. What do you do? All right, Lyle, we'll give you the final word. We've got about, I don't know, like
about a minute.
About a minute.
I want to thank Claire. This has been great. I knew that last week's show touched the hearts of a lot of people and stirred up a lot of things positively because of the emails and phone calls. And so I called Claire and I said, you know, I think we have the opportunity, especially you, Claire, to come on and share some information that the public's just not receiving. So I'm really glad that she was available to do this. And I thank you, Aaron and Bill, for giving us the second week and all this time to lay some really critical foundation that I pray will pay some dividends.
I think everybody's thinking it, but we would really like to have you guys come back on as this develops. So our guests have been Claire Lopez and Dr. Lyle Rapacki. You can find all the information about them and commercial-free archive of this show to share at WeThePeopleRadio.us.